76 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 9th, 2012. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my simulated brother, James Furlough.
Dear citizens, fear not, for I am your mayor, and we'll make sure that everything is fun.
Don't you mean, could be like opportunity? Hey, say hello, Simoleon.
Which, you know, the funny part is you can actually tell that they literally invented a new language.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually like a cadence and consistency to it.
Yeah, I mean, well, and there was one of them where, what did they do? It was like a word like airplane or plane or, you know, it was a distinctive word. And in their gobbledygook talk, the way the guy said it, and because it was like it had a sentence in like triple dots and then that last word. And the characters, like, talked a whole bunch of nonsense, paused, and then said this last word, which sounded like a derivative of, like, airplane or whatever the word was. And I was just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. They've actually invested the time and energy to create their own dictionary for this stuff.
I'm sure it's one of those things where if you don't do that and you just have people, like, make up noises in order to, like, quote, fill the speech, either the cadence is all off and it doesn't sound right, like it's the wrong, you know, it's the classic, you know, the mouth moves for, like, 13 seconds and the word yes. or it just sounds really repetitive. So I'm sure you have to at some point come up with a method of creating the right amount of syllables and, you know, and that they're not repeating enough where it sounds like they're actually, it's ridiculous though.
So why don't you just have to speak English? So what I want to know is, I mean, obviously they got it set up. So like the programmers just type in English and it runs through the translator and it works. But what I want to know is that did they literally like go through every single new word? And if it's not in the dictionary, they create a new word for it, or is it programmatically figured out, you know, like pig Latin?
I'm sure it's I'm sure it's somewhat randomly generated. It's probably they probably break all. So for those of you who don't know what we're talking about SimCity. I'm sure what they do is they break down the words into their into like the whatever 36 different phonetic letters. So they actually break down English words phonetically and then do some sort of a translation on them, similar to Pig Latin, so that you have the right number of syllables, and they just change the phonetic pronunciations of words.
Yeah.
But all the words are there, I'm sure, is how they do it, or something similar, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways,
we're not
actually here to talk about imaginary languages. Well, we might be next.
We might be
the language of Mordor, and then Klingon, and then what other Hyrulean, the language of the
Hyrulean.
But among imaginary languages, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and our favorite, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, though, James has a short disclosure, or should I say
yes,
closure day. See, get it? It's Pig Latin. I'm terrible at Pig Latin.
Yes, you are. So I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Cool. Yeah. So if you want to...
it's too fast, huh? I take it by surprise.
I know. Like, but you got it down and compact, and you know you don't pontificate like I do. So if you want to follow us throughout the week and hear the interesting things that we say, you can follow us on the Twitter. I am at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
And we also have the at Furlough Bros is the show Twitter, which has been kind of quiet lately for additional thoughts. And I've been thinking about the fact that I don't use it. I plan on changing that. At least one additional tweet this week beyond just updating you of when the podcast stuff comes out. But if you want actual information about the show and all the things going on, I would recommend going to furloughbros.com. That's got a ton of good clicks and links. If you got articles that you think are interested or you think we're wrong and you want to, you know, yell at us and see our sources and watch the videos, we're never wrong. But if you think you are and you need to be proven wrong, you can do your research at furloughbros.com. That's where we put all our sources and articles and videos you're that welcome. We talk about. We also share links to our Twitter accounts and emails and all sorts of fun stuff. So go there, or you can always just hunt us down on Facebook like some of our faithful listeners have, and we will probably say, we might say it. We probably, I don't know, I say yes. I don't know. James will judge you based on how you look and your profile picture if he says yes or no.
It's true.
But so, so look respectable.
I won't deny it.
I like improving my clout score by having a huge number of friends on Facebook. So that's sort of my, that's my methodology. Just say yes to anybody who asks. It's all about the clout score.
It's fine.
I know. Anyways, and by the way, if we've been saying this the last couple weeks, if you're checking out the show, you might notice that we now do this cool thing where we break the show down into bite-sized chunks, not just the entire two-hour podcast. That's a separate feed. If you want to sign up for it, go ahead, tell a friend, share these clips with people. You can email them to your friends. Nobody will mind if you email everybody in your email contacts with clips from our show. I promise you, they'll appreciate it.
So yeah, they'll actually thank you.
Yeah, they definitely won't just delete it.
That's proven, actually. We have research studies by people.
Yes.
That is true.
People with computers.
I love it. One of the things you can download on SimCity is this Heroes thing. And when you build it, you get this hero. It's like Mega Man or something like that. And he'll be like, I will defeat the guys using my brains and science. Right.
I like what you said there, and I know this is sort of jumping the gun, but I'm going to throw this out there. I like how you said you can buy this additional thing where you get the superhero pack. But you know what? It's incredibly difficult to buy a version without the superhero pack because they want you to have to pay extra for it. So I don't know anybody who doesn't have the superhero pack, including myself, who desperately would have saved the $10 because I just want the core game. So it's interesting that you use the word can, but they got me, so I get superheroes too.
There you go. So you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
You know, actually, my favorite part about that is you get super villains. That's what I really want. I'm gonna,
they draw you in. The super villain layer looks so much cooler than the superhero one.
Oh, for sure. The superhero thing looks super lame. It's like squatty little nothing of a building, and the supervillain is this giant tower. And I played really, really briefly. Where it was just like, I like this small town with like dirt roads, and it was like a coal mining, like a mining operation town. Mm-hmm. It was very dirty, but just very rural. They're like honestly, it was like all dirt roads and this giant skyscraper in the middle of the city for the evil warlords. I'm like, that's awesome. I mean, everybody in this region is going to hate me because I'm just going to export crime and dirty power.
This could be bad guy. That's funny.
Anyways, like I said, we will get back into the heart of SimCity later.
It'll just be throughout, I'm sure. But yeah, eventually we will talk about it.
Yeah, we will get to the heart of darkness on that one.
But first, as you guys know, we like to do a couple warm-up stuff to kind of get the engines going. Not that we need it this week, trust me. Because I will admit, we might have had a conversation ahead of time that was related to a certain game that will go unmentioned for at least 10 more seconds. And so we're already revved and pumped. But first, let's talk about the new features of the Samsung phone.
So we only talk about rumors if they come on really good authority or if they or if they're really interesting or,
they
or
have
fascinating.
Pictures related to them.
And generally, if they're Apple, which is a bit unfair. So I saw this one and I decided, you know, it's actually interesting. It's pretty valid. And the only thing that it's missing is that it's not Apple. It's a Samsung Galaxy rumor, but I thought it was worth mentioning because it seems like it's going to happen.
Okay.
That's so mean. I actually care about this, especially because people will probably – anyways. So they've got this new, like, eye-tracking software that basically the camera can keep track of your face. This is a technology that's been really – you know, the idea of facial tracking, in particular eyeball tracking, has been around for quite a few years now. I mean, longer than
the concept of it or actually doing it?
Yeah, actually doing it. I mean, like, it's been around longer than, you know, it's, yeah, they've had it built into cameras forever where, like, automatically, the automatic facial detection stuff. And for a while there, it was only big time, you know, like, you'd have to have really powerful computers doing it. But as time has gone on, people have gotten better and better, and now they do facial detection, facial recognition on your phone. And
they can do it while you're literally sitting at the shot. It'll put a little square around their face.
Right, exactly. So a very cool little thing, but Samsung has come up with this kind of a cool concept where they basically are thinking we can watch your eyes as you're watching the screen, so we can kind of know where you're looking. So they have three new feature sets that they're introducing. One, and the one that seems to get all the chatter, is what they call the smart scroll. The screen will start to scroll automatically if the device detects that you're looking at the screen. It could be annoying if it doesn't work properly. That's the one that everybody also kind of gets, like, automatically, That's the one that everybody kind of hears and they're like, well, that sounds stupid. We're like, what happens if it doesn't work? And you're like, well, you can just turn it off, but, you know, and it may not work. And actually, with my particular opinion based on Samsung, is that it will work about 90% of how well it should work. And that last 10% is going to make it completely unpalatable and nobody will actually use it.
Because this is Samsung, not Android. Right.
Right. Exactly. This is not a Google invention. This is a Samsung particular. And this is the sort of thing that they do with these features. They're like 90%. They work 90% of the time.
Fantastic.
Which is super annoying. Sometimes for like key features that interact with you all the time. But what I wanted to mention, and because this kind of gets left out, is that they got some other cool features. One of them is Smart Stay. The Smart Stay disables screen timeout if it detects that your face is watching the screen. So if you're like holding the screen, like for example, let's play you're playing Sudoku, and you're like sitting there going, okay, I don't know what my next move is. Now that never happens to me because I play super fast because I'm smarter than everybody. But some of you, I realize, have to like sit there and meditate a long time on it. Or if you're like reading a dense article or whatever. Basically what it does is if it sees that your eyes are focused on it, it'll just your screen won't dim, which is I think is really cool. That's actually a useful feature to me. They've got smart screen orientation adjust to the angle of your sight. So, you know, the classic example, like, you know, the screen lock, you can lay in bed and it'll read. Well, because the phone knows more than just like, you know, what the orientation the phone is. If it can see your eyes, it can actually lock it in the right orientation based on like how you're laying down. So like, let's say you're laying on your side.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll keep it in a portrait instead of landscape, even though, because it knows where your eyes are. So it keeps it oriented towards your eye, which is, you know, it's a cool thing. And then the other one is smart pause. This is pretty neat. Let's say you're watching a YouTube video and all of a sudden you hear a crash because somebody dropped something and you look away to look at the crash, it will automatically pause the video for you so that when you come back, and then restart the video when you come back so that you don't miss a second of your glorious YouTube. So all of these are pretty cool features. And a lot of people
YouTube will love that for the commercial part of it when I always look away and get distracted.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, just kidding. You actually have to. Eyeballs glued to the commercial. Go.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, that feature's getting turned off. So, I don't know. It's one of those things where actually I think they're pretty clever. And, you know, and once again, this is all about execution. It really is like, you know, how well do they do it? If it works well and it kind of it's used intelligently and everything, It'll be nice. Yeah. If they execute it like they execute swipe to text, most people will hate it. And think it's only actually, it's funny. Most people love swipe to text, and I just don't, like, I can't wrap my head around that, because I, or when I talk to people about it, there's always a caveat of like, dude, I really like swipe to text. Cause like text, I was like, I think it's super annoying because it like couldn't tell the difference between swiping and texting, which is really annoying for like corrections. And it didn't have a big enough vocabulary for me, or like it didn't deal with spelling errors very well. Drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, oh yeah, well I had like a slide out keyboard, so I only used the swipe to text on the touchscreen. And then when I needed to like type physically, I typed on the keyboard. So it was like, well, yeah, that's a bit of a caveat, don't you think? Like that's like a different thing.
Mentioned that one, I feel like. Okay. Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I like the idea of them going outside the phone for cues. You know, to have the accelerometer and the Velociraptor and some of those other, I already forgot what it's called.
Or gyroscope.
Gyroscope, there we go.
Velociraptor.
Yeah, and you know, to have some of those where it understands like where the phone is, I think is cool. And for them to be taking that step to say, now what we're going to try to figure out is where you are.
Yeah,
and we'll adapt to how the phone acts that way is interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely. Cool. I mean, it's a, you know, it's something that I look forward to see how it's implemented, because it's not an easy task they're doing, but it's definitely something that other pieces of hardware do. And you know, the classic example in this is Kinect, where it's like it works really, really well. It's just been terribly executed upon, and you know, so it's one of those things where if they could, you know, as long as the technology's there, the capability's there, it's all about finesse and fine-tuning of the programming and getting it into people's hands. But I think I think one of the big things here is it will sell phones. You know, people will go out and buy, because it's got the eye-scrolling thing, you know, even if they don't use it after the first week. But
maybe they're like me, and they when you, the very first thing you do in the morning is you wake up and you read your email and the news. And the very last thing you do before you go to bed is read your email, watch the news, you know. And so, yeah, there's definitely times where I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I gotta, you know, play the rotation game and be like, okay, how close can I get this before it? Back it off a little bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, and like I said, I mean, I think like that feature, I think it'll be very easy to execute on, and I think it'll work well, and I look forward to seeing how well it performs, you know, and I think that legitimately will, you know, I don't know if I'd buy a phone over that, but definitely a perk to having that, and you know what I do want? Speaking of features, I want I use a number of iOS devices, and for this podcast, whenever I go into do not disturb mode, I got to turn all of my devices off. And since I keep my iPad mini and my iPhone, it's like kind of annoying to have to like go in and remember to do both and then the other ones. And I feel like that's kind of universally true, but they should have like an iCloud feature where you could just do not disturb one device and it'll turn all of your other devices to do not disturb. And when you turn it back on, all of them will turn back on to do disturb.
Interesting.
That's completely off topic. I just thinking about that as the show was starting. Like, that's driving me crazy.
That's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. That one's for free, Samsung and Apple.
Feel free to copy it. We won't trademark it or anything. We won't even ask for a large royalty.
Yeah, you know what? All I want is you to think about mentioning it was my idea.
I just mention it in the code as a comment. You know, I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, it's good enough for me.
Saw this on Furlough Bros, or heard it on Furlough Bros first.
Yeah.
That's it, literally. I mean, I don't know how to hack a phone to look at the code, but to know that if I could, I could see it there.
Well, you're going to be super disappointed because you won't be able to get the notes in the code on the phone.
Because it's just the binary, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, notes don't compile into the binary. Bummer.
Well, you know what? They can figure out a way to do it. They can figure out a way. I have trust in the Apple. So, speaking of cool features, the Roku has just come out with their next iteration, or they're going to.
Yeah.
I don't know which one it is. But they had this one cool feature about it. You know what the Roku is? Think of it as it's Apple TV, essentially, where you can download shows, stream shows, and watch it on your television. There it is. That's the Roku. And it's for $99. But they have this really cool feature called private listening mode.
Yeah. Okay?
You plug in a pair of headphones to the remote's headphone jack, and you can listen to whatever you're playing right on your Roku.
Whoa. That's novel. Yeah, I get
this. This too. Plugging in the headphones also automatically mutes your TV, and the headphone volume can be adjusted using the rocker on the right side of the remote. But check this out. The headphone volume leaves the TV volume unaffected. So cranking it up in private listening mode won't blast the room when you pop out the headphones.
Nice.
Isn't that awesome?
I like that. That is awesome.
That's just one of those where you're like, duh.
Yeah, yeah. That's a clever way to do that. That's a very clever way to do that.
Yeah. I heard that and was just like, that could have saved a lot of, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it where they've got those, like, those remote headphones that you wear that are, you know,
super
beastly
ugly things. Yeah.
And just like,
they are almost universally ugly, which I don't understand why they have to be, but.
Well, because they're not made by, like, okay, I'm going to offend somebody, by real electronic manufacturing companies.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it, okay? Because this is the truth, all right? And So there are certain things. HP is excellent at hardware. If HP made those, it would probably actually look pretty good, okay? Obviously, Apple is also pretty good at hardware. HP is horrible at software stuff because HP is not known as a software company.
Right.
So HP struggles. So HP does hire software people, and it does software things, but they are not the cream of the crop software engineers, okay?
Right.
And so as a result, whenever HP has a software-related thing, it takes twice as long, probably costs twice as much, and has half the functionality. You know, it's like everything you don't want
right about
it, which,
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So if you had one of those sliding scales where you could adjust the different qualities, they'd all be adjusted to the wrong side.
Yeah. And because the problem is if you're a software developer, okay, so, let's think about Apple, right? This might even be a better example here. When it comes to operating system software, Apple's pretty good, right? I think we can agree on that. However, when it comes to web software, not so much, right? Because they're not known as a networking web-related company, which is what's so interesting about iCloud, and probably one of the reasons why it's not living up to the dream that they have for it, because they don't have the cream of the crop, HTML, JavaScript, you know, those guys, software engineers, because they're all working for Google.
Well, what's worse about it, I mean, it's more complicated than that, because what you start to understand is one of the reasons why Google's web works so well is hardware designed to work with software, you know, web-based software that they're designing. Those things are tightly integrated, and they actually have an army of hardware engineers that work in concert with their software engineers. It's not just that the best software engineers are working at Google, which they are, you know, the network engineers are working at Google, but it's also the best hardware network engineers are working at Google too. And so it's like, it's a super complicated, frustrating problem.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm sure that Google is on the opposite side where like their Android operating system is not as good as they would like it to be because you know what? All the OS guys, the cream of the crop are all working for Apple. So, right. I mean, so the real question is who's going to get. So Apple is encroaching upon Google space, and Google is encroaching upon Apple space. And the question is, who's going to get better at what the other person does faster? And you know, and it's just we're still up in the air. It would appear that Google is learning faster than Apple is. I think so. That just you know, my brief guess. So you know, and HP has one of these struggles, right? Where it's kind of it sit there as like, oh, we're the uncool third party now, and you know, how do you how do you convince software, you know, the cream of the crop to come work for you? And they're like, you know, they're getting job offers from some
Money.
Well, I mean, that's, you would think so, right? But it's just, it's tough. So all that's,
The real issue is that it's like, you can offer them more, you know, you can say, yeah, you just have to offer them more money, but it's like, you're talking about two of the biggest deepest pockets in the world are trying to hire them too.
Yeah.
And not to mention, not everybody is compelled by money. So it's like the people who are compelled primarily by money can still be, you know, lured over to Google easier than HP.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's almost like what HP has to learn how to do, and this is hard, right? I mean, again, thinking about the competitive set, is it's got to create a vision that pulls people in, and they genuinely think that they're going to change the world, and HP is the best place to do it. And, you know, and that in and of itself is exciting, which you're competing against driverless cars. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a vision. Hard to beat. I get it. You know, even, and, you know, and so that's what HP would have to do in addition with throwing some serious change at people. All that to say, wireless headphone sets are designed by people who like music.
Right.
They're not in the wireless technology and making very small components.
Right. And they're not design specialists. They don't design beautiful headphones. They don't design, they design, or worse, and this is actually the epitome of where these kind of things come from, is it's, you know, this was designed by somebody who said, you know, it'd be really nice is if I had headphones that plugged into my TV that I could use across I sit on the couch. I need wireless headphones and that like work with my TV. And they started working with one of those, like, you know, 3-minute infomercial teams, and that's who engineered this thing. So it really only does one thing. It wirelessly connects to your TV, and everything else is a secondary, you know, sort of low class solution. The sound quality is low, the latency on the
So I hope that like companies like TV manufacturers look at what the Roku's doing and go, that is brilliant.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is super clever. I mean, and that's the sort of thing that it's like you immediately like look at Apple and go, all right, Apple, your turn. You know, that's like, let's go. This is like the competitive product. But like you said, why can't you have two sound profiles for your Philips TV and your Philips remote have a headphone jack? Like, that is brilliant. It really is. And it's something that everybody can get into and can get behind. You know, that's super clever. Nice job, Roku. And, you know, especially with the advent of smart TVs, the idea of, you know, man, you don't even think about the fact that why don't you have a USB plug and a headphone jack in your remote and have your remote be how you connect, you know, so like, let's say, okay.
I'm sure battery life is an issue,
but whatever. We got super lithium ion batteries nowadays. We'll get over it.
A little charging station for your remote, a little touchstone.
Right, exactly.
Charges.
But legitimately, it's like, you know, if you've got a smart TV with a little USB plug and you plug the USB thing in there, and all of a sudden, all it has to be is a serial, wireless serial thing that has a higher baud rate than a universal serial bus, and just turn it into a serial bus and a headphone jack, so you can plug in your like your keyboard and mouse, or you could plug in your jump drive, or you could plug in your hard drive, or you could plug in whatever, and now all of a sudden you can plug it in. Man, that's clever. Nice job, Roku. That actually gets me. I want to buy a Roku. I changed my mind.
It's only $99.
I'm gonna buy an Apple TV. I just $99. Okay,
that's it.
Maybe I can buy a Roku and an Apple TV.
All right, Mr. Moneybags.
I know.
Cool.
I just need a screen to plug those into. You know what?
Oh,
that'll come eventually,
and
right?
Don't forget about the sound system to go with it for when it's not plugged into the remote.
Oh baby,
definitely want a console to play games and a Blu-ray player, which means then you'll have to have Blu-rays.
Yeah, you know, home entertainment systems are not.
That is what is known as the rat race.
Yes. Actually, you know what I really do want? This is ridiculous. So my adventures in 3D vision have got me all excited.
Did you finally get the glasses?
I finally got the glasses, and it works cool. It actually works really, really well. The whole setup is it's everybody who looks at it goes, wow, you made that? That's That's really cool. And I was like, not only is it really cool, it's super easy. And so anyways, the reason I was going on that is now I totally want, like, now I'm actually looking into like 3D TV monitors and stuff, like solutions, because I think those are cool and I've always kind of liked them, but now I'm like full on, this is awesome. And I'm like, and the real problem is that, like, I haven't figured out like a real good excuse. I don't have any content for it. That's the real problem. If I had any content for it, I might do something stupid and buy something that I don't need. But I just don't have any, like, the content is like, I'm gonna buy the gas stations without any, cars, and which came.
Well, they have 3D movies, don't they?
Well, yeah, but like, I'm not gonna go out and buy a bunch of 3D movies. Like, what the heck?
Can you rent them on Netflix or
Oh,
something?
maybe. That's what you should. I gotta look at. YouTube has a 3D channel, which is
That's
pretty
right.
awesome. So I was checking that out on the other after I got my glasses. I was watching a bunch of 3D, and it's oh, so cool, man. I don't know. I totally get into 3D. Like, a lot of people are like stupid. And I'm like, I don't know. It's a unique experience. And I can see video games being really fun. This is the thing, though. I am still upset the fact that okay, your stupid Samsung phone is going to be doing head tracking to track where your eyes are, and yet they don't do 3D perspective shifting, where like where the it knows where your eyeballs are, so it can give you the proper perspective, so you can like play 3D games, 3D quote faux 3D, where your perspective shifts. I sit there and I go, man, there is like, it's somebody has got to come out with like the ultimate in 3D gaming devices, where
Yeah,
it's
it's
like
called
it's
a
not.
3DS.
You know what though? It's not though, because it doesn't do head tracking. Like, all of this comes together. We're like so close, so close. Somebody is gonna pop one of these days with like a full on immersive 3D, and everybody's just gonna be like, oh, my brain explodes. And it's actually, I guess the Oculus Rift headset is what that's supposed to be all about, right? It's a headset, but it's got like, it knows where your head is, so it shifts your perspective with where your head is, and it's got like two screens, so it's like full on 3D, but they're big old LCDs all over your face, so it's like fully immersive. Okay, maybe that's what I need to buy. All right, I'm buying one today.
Done. I love
Cool.
it. In the meantime,
Yeah.
let's talk about something recently purchased.
Me?
Well,
Or both of
yeah,
us,
you
really?
and me. So,
Yeah.
okay, so we already talked about SimCity a little bit.
Yes.
Let's dive in. Let's go to the depths
Okay.
of it.
We didn't really discuss how we wanted to discuss this. Are we gonna start with the controversy or amazing stuff? Want the good news
Yeah,
first
that's
or the bad news first?
so. Let's start with the bad news, I think. Which, how about let's just tell the story, I guess,
All
and in the
right.
process, and then I want to recap with my current strategy, and or maybe finish with what I'm currently working on, and
Fair
seek your
enough.
advice on this,
Okay.
because I have a slight problem with my city
Fair enough.
that needs to be solved. Okay, so SimCity launched this week.
Yes, it
Wednesday, I think,
did.
officially.
This is,
And
I think it's being referred to as SimCity 5 outside. It's just the actual title is SimCity, but it is the fifth generation of the
yeah,
classic SimCity.
which is funny because EA, oh my gosh, everyone calls it SimCity 5, and they're like, no, it's not SimCity 5. It's a totally new SimCity. Okay. So, all
And
right.
then you play
But
it and
it's
you're like,
the fifth version, right?
yeah,
Yeah, but
and it has the exact same name and gameplay style. That's
yeah, you're just like,
dude,
okay,
EA,
it's
you
different.
guys.
Fine. Well, and EA also had another controversy. That was mini controversy. Their other one was the fact that you have to be online to play.
Yeah.
It was a requirement, and everybody was not happy with this. And you could tell it was a, what do they call that? It's a business decision. Is that what they call it in sports when a guy doesn't like lay out for a ball? He made a business
Yeah,
decision
right.
not to go for it. And it sounds like EA did the same thing where they're like, no, we're going to do this because of piracy. And we're just going to force it. And everyone was like, you can't handle it. The servers are bad. What happens if it goes down? Stuff like that. I watched this, it was a short YouTube clip where they were interviewing, it was a producer, developer or something like that, an important guy. And And the guy was like, you know, talking about the game, and he goes, "All right, what about the servers?" You know, and he goes, "You know, is that an issue?" He goes, "No, we have thought this through. The servers will not go down. It's going to stay up." Because I think, what was it, Diablo 3 had some slight issues.
Yeah, on launch day, it was terrible.
Yeah, and so the guy was like, "Really, they're not going to go down? Is, you know, are you making a promise to me right now that they're not going to go down?" He goes, "Yeah, that's a promise. They're not going down."
Nice.
Well, guess what?
Yeah, it was less than 24 hours.
Servers went down.
Yeah,
almost instantly. And, you know, which, when you have a situation where you're already requiring everyone to be online and they already don't like that, even if the rollout had been flawless, there still would have been people complaining over like a second or two of it being down.
Right.
This was not a second or two of it being down. This was literally like, "Oh no, you can't play. It is not working."
Yeah.
And
you just spent at least $60 because you can't get the $50 version of the game anywhere. Yep. Because you need the superheroes. You just spent $60 and you're not going to be able to play today, by the way. Sorry. Which is exactly what happened with Diablo and Diablo 3, and everybody was freaking out about it. They were not pleased. But
yeah. And they are. So I started following their Twitter feed and have that come into my phone because that's been entertaining. Because they are in... they're in full like PR mode right now.
Yeah,
just trying every
sort of
every trying of like, "Come on, guys, just bear with us. We're working on it." Which it still took them like a day and a half, I think, to actually respond and be like, "Okay, yeah, we noticed that the servers are down, but we're working on it." and you're just, oh my gosh. So you'd have a situation where, and I have this has happened every other time I played so far, where you get going, it checks the servers, and it's like, "All right, you're set to go. Go!" And it's like, "Oh, just kidding, they're actually busy. Wait 20 minutes and we'll try again."
What?
And it's a legitimate 20 minutes, man. They do not, you know, it's not like game time 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's like you were there for 20 minutes staring at a countdown. Oh, and don't restart it, because that will just restart the 20 minutes again for you.
Really?
Because I might have tried that. And I was like...
That's rough.
You know where you're like, you get 5 minutes and you're like, "This is dumb. Quit, restart, try again." Oh, 20 minutes.
Because they have, yeah, of course that happens. That's super frustrating.
Yeah, so you sit there and I'm like, "Well, I guess this is a good time to read my news for the podcast." I got 20 minutes. So like, for example, I took an hour long lunch and I was like, "Oh, sweet, I'll play for an hour." No, I will play for 40 minutes. I will not play for an hour.
Obnoxious.
Come on! Had I known that, I would have started this 20 minutes before.
Right.
So, yeah, it was... so that was frustrating, for sure. And we were talking just a little bit earlier because, you know, the whole thing is you can play with multiple friends, but it sounds like you have to be on the same server or something for them to even recognize that you guys are friends and playing together.
Right.
So I've got three friends. You know, my clout score is big on SimCity. And one of which I see all the time, which A, I'm like, "Wow, you weren't kidding when you say you play a lot of games." And then another guy, I saw him once, and it was our cousin, and we were jumping servers the first night because this was Thursday night because we were trying to, you know, to play. And it wouldn't even recognize our friend request, which come to find out was like a bug that they had to fix and was one of the things that just wasn't working. But we were bouncing and bouncing and bouncing until we finally found a server together that worked, and which was kind of funny because we were just like texting, and it took us like an hour to figure that out. And then thankfully by then, I think by some point in time, I finally gave up. I was like, "All right, clearly the friend piece of it isn't working right now. I'm just going to play. See ya."
Right.
And so I played for – I was like, "Oh, I'll only play for a few hours, a couple hours." I played a little longer than that. it's one of those where like you go to bed at 1:30 in the morning, like, "That was so awesome." But here's the best part. Woke up the next day, and this was – so this lunchtime thing, I was "I'm going to play during lunch." This is so frustrating. I'm on the same server, okay?
Yeah.
I haven't changed anything. I log in, and it goes, "Oh, here, let's take you through the tutorial." And I'm going, "Okay, this is bad. Tutorial, huh? Okay, I'll play along, I guess." finish the tutorial.
Yeah, there's no way to skip the tutorial, by the way.
Well, apparently there is. There is, actually, because they tweeted this one out.
Great.
You just exit to the main menu, and that will finish the tutorial.
That's fantastic that I know now that I've had to suffer through that obnoxious tutorial.
Yeah, well, because apparently every time you switch servers, guess what?
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
So that was one of the – I was following the Twitter feed, and that was one of the pieces of advice.
Well, that one's not too bad.
But I got done. My city was gone. I got
destroyed
all over. And I was like – which I was kind of like, good, because I wasn't super happy with my first one.
But still.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, come on, man. That's annoying. So they're definitely – I don't feel too bad for them, right? Because everybody told them, you're going to have problems with the servers. Just so you know, this is not going to work. And no, it'll all be fun. We're all good. And, you know, now they're like scrambling. Oh, man, we're so tired of having to work 24 hours running servers and trying to make it work. Like, you know what, guys? You had like months to add servers. I don't feel bad that you're just finally getting around to it in the last second.
Right. You know, Well, and I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, so my side of the observation of this story was our cousin pre-ordered. So I had this clever plan. I didn't want to buy the game for a while because StarCraft II comes out next Tuesday. And StarCraft is one of the, you know, like we talk about, you know, we've talked about it on the show before. You and I are not really gamers. Like I've been pretending to be a gamer for like the last year, mostly for the sake of the show.
Oh, I got news on that too.
One of the few games that I've really like have actually like stuck with over the years though is StarCraft. And I played StarCraft II and I loved it and Wings of Liberty. And so I was really looking forward to Heart of the Swarm. And also I found out that it comes the week after after SimCity launches. I had already promised Timmy that I was like, yeah, I'll play it with you. I'll play it with you. I can afford it. It'll be fun and, you know, be social, whatever. I came up with this clever idea. I was like, all right, Timmy. So he has a Mac and you have a Mac. I was like, all right, Timmy, I'll tell you what. I'll get it when both you and James get it, thinking that this will be the thing. And I always figured both of you would wait for the Mac version because, well, and then that comes out in the spring, gives me plenty of time to play StarCraft and beat it and have fun with it before I have to jump into StarCraft. Or on SimCity. So Timmy pre-orders it. I was like, that's okay. I still got James to hold out on. And Timmy is dual booted as like onto his Windows 7 partition on his mm-hmm. Mac. I'm like, that's cool. All right, that's fine. No, you know what? I'm not worried. I'm not worried. I know James is going to wait for the Mac version, so I'm good.
Yeah.
And then Thursday, you contact me. So I got some shit. He's like, no, Lord, you're not supposed to do that. What the heck, James?
I couldn't resist after watching all the reviews.
How are you doing this? So, like, I got a computer. I'm doing it. I've got Windows. You like, I'm like, oh, Jesus. Oh, man. Okay. I guess I'll get it now. And, you know, now I have to put off StarCraft for a month while I play SimCity.
It'll be okay.
I know, I'll survive somehow. But
it's funny.
So I'm like, okay, I'll buy it like Friday night or Saturday morning because I'm not going to be able to play it till Saturday. So like, you know, I'll just get it at the end of the weekend. So I'm starting to do show prep on Thursday as I get a really sick feeling in my stomach because I'm starting to read the reviews and the articles that are coming out. I'm like, is this really what's about to happen? Like, this game is expensive. I want to play StarCraft next week. And the reviews are just atrocious. They're all, you know, Amazon suspended sales of the game on Friday.
Because of server issues.
Huge article. Yeah, because of server. Yeah, you can't play the game, so we're not going to sell it. Sorry. It has a 1-star rating on Amazon.
Yeah.
Which I think actually is, you know, that's indicative I think that's unfair. I think a lot of people, what it was is it was a, everybody wants to pile on, and it was, you know, it's part of the herd mentality that gets going on the internet where you they poked a beehive, and the beehive came out with the, you know,
and,
that's where.
And you know what? Since it's all, the servers are all dependent on the number of users, vote that sucker down, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to play it better. And so, I don't know, I felt this kind of like, yeah, this like sickening feeling. And then I read an IGN article that was pretty interesting, and where they talked about the nature of always on DRM and how like that is the problem with the game.
Yeah.
And digital rights management, where basically the whole reason that it exists is to you know, to make it so that it's so that you have to, you know, you can't pirate it because you have to be on, like,
yeah, it's all about piracy. It doesn't actually improve the game, which is
right.
The frustrating part.
Right. Well, I actually like the idea of it being a multiplayer game. You know, a massively multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
Online.
All right, maybe.
If that, I like that in concept, but the problem with the game.
For SimCity?
Well, yeah. I honestly, this is the thing. If it were just SimCity 5 and it were a standalone game, I wouldn't buy it.
Okay.
I'd play it, but I wouldn't necessarily go out and buy it. And I like SimCity games. I've owned a bunch of them. I've played them a lot. I'm just at a point where I own the old ones. I own SimCity Societies. I own SimCity 4. I still play them. I enjoy them. Like, I'm not – why do I need another one? Like, what are you going to bring to the table that's so much cooler? To me, the reason I got the game was because my friends are playing it and I can play with them. Create a natural disaster of a city and adversely affect my friends, you know, and enjoy watching them. Hey, what the heck, man? And, you know, or I can, like, look at other people's cities. Like, I don't know. It's unique. It is a cool addition.
Okay.
And I sit there and I go, and as long as it's, like, well executed and a big feature of the game, well, yeah, I don't mind spending the money and spending the time to play this game. Like, that's cool. And
which I would say, I don't know if it's a big feature, but it's definitely, you know, it affects your gameplay to
right.
a degree. But, and agreed that the game is definitely. So what I've heard is, and I would agree with this, the game is amazing when it works.
Right. And that's basically what everybody has been saying. I have read a couple of reviews where people like really are getting down on it. Like, the game is terrible. There's flaws in it that are just like insurmountable. It's like, you know, it's like your Sims have to get new jobs and like find new houses every day. They don't like keep it. So sometimes your power plants are employed, like your power plants are run by like super educated people, and then the next day they might be, you know, run by like a bunch of, you know, idiots that like don't, you know, and they're like complaining about the fact that like the game shifts things over time. You're like, yeah, it's kind of like most industries in real. I don't understand what you're saying. Companies do go through cycles of education. Like, and I sit there and I go, like, there are people that actually have problems with the games. There are people that are like, no, it's a great fun game as long as it's working. There are people that are like, no, the only reason I play is because it's an online thing. Like, I don't know. It was such a weird balance to strike. And actually, the thing that bugs me most about it is the fact that you can't save any content like on your own computer, or you can't like manage where the content's saved.
I actually don't even know how to save anything, to be honest.
I don't think you do.
But it would be nice to have some sort of confirmation that it's saved or synced, because I literally don't know until I quit. And I mean, like, when you quit the game, then it's like, oh, okay, Sinking Cities. Oh, thank you, because.
Yeah.
I literally did not know if that's the case at all. And, you know, so there's little things like that. The other one that I've heard, which I could see is a semi-legitimate one, is they were saying that the city sizes are not big enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd love to see them bigger, which I'm like, you know, when you're first building, it's fine. It's not too big at all. And then you do eventually get to a point where you're like, okay, you know, I've noticed the limits, the city limits, but I'm also like, it requires you a different type of play. You know, you can't just sprawl and sprawl.
It's
you have to be meaningful.
Right. It's a different game. I know exactly. I mean, it's you know, it's SimCity 4 still works and it's still a great game. And if that's what you want to do, go and do that. I personally believe that, you know, part of the downloadable content later on will be bigger cities.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why you start with such small cities is because you don't know if your servers are going to work or not. I actually think
they won't.
Well, you say, I actually think that as confident as they were that the servers were going to work, I am under no belief that internally they thought the servers were going to work. Of course they go down. They always go down. And they knew that, and they were doing everything they could to stop that, but they weren't going to come out beforehand.
Well, they were hoping that they'd go down for 24 hours.
Right.
And then it would subside, and they wouldn't have to do anything about it.
Right.
And well, you know, when it persisted, that's when they were like, okay, we should address this.
Right. You just sit there and you go, I don't know. It's an interesting, like, you know, I don't have that big of a problem with it. I really don't. I come back and I sit there and I go, like, people who, like, they are indignant, man. People are indignant about this policy, and they're like, this is like the most offensive thing that a video game company can possibly do to its
I've, like, yeah, it's, I only spent my money. If it worked just fine, it would be okay, but I get too, you spent money and you can't play it, which is why EA is going to give everybody another free game later in the month as penance, which I was like, all right, that's cool, I'll take a free game. Because I was going to keep playing it no matter what.
Right.
You know, I would have loved to have seen, it would have been very cool to have like a company like HP who goes, hey, EA, we're a hardware company. We have servers. Can we help?
Yeah.
You know, or have like, or, you know, HP probably wouldn't have, but Google, hey, you know, we have some servers sitting around. Want us to load up the information and just carry the load for you to get you past this hump here? And
right.
You know, we'll help you. You know, I think that would have been, that just would have been awesome from an industry standpoint. You know, if Sergey Brin was like, dude, EA, SimCity's not working. Can we help you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I imagine he would be like the one to do it.
I was going
to
say, but I also don't think he plays very many video games.
He's busy changing the world right now.
I think his brain is filled with more important thoughts. not to say our thoughts aren't important, but compared to his, they're not important.
I'm okay with that. You know, yeah. I will openly and freely admit that he is smarter than me, working on cooler things than me, and his life is better than mine. I will admit that.
Exactly.
I'll admit that.
Yeah, I don't know. So, but on the flip side of this, like, I've played the game and I enjoy it. And I honestly, what I hope happens is when you, me, Timmy, and everybody all sits down and plays together and we all get into the same region, that we actually do what they recommend, which is you specialize in your cities and we, like, build these. Like, you don't have to worry about them.
All right. Yeah. So I already have taken care of the microprocessors. I'm there.
Oh, sure. Good. That's what you picked. Dude, I'm so building the dirtiest city. I'm going to supply all the power and pollution and crime.
So here's my situation, right? You know, you were taking your time to get on and Timmy and I didn't seem to be syncing up. So I was like, well, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah.
And so my city is, it's big. I mean, it's not ridiculous, but it's getting big, right? To the point where, like, I'm starting to be ready to do the major project, and I'm like trying to figure out, all right, which one makes sense for the city and stuff like that, which I have actually all the resources to build the solar farm. And
nice.
It's like, I should go for that. That would make sense. Okay. So I have two problems with my city right now. Okay. And so I don't know how I got myself into this, but what's cool about it is when you specialize, you can then sell your stuff onto the global market, which is some, you know, invisible hand. That's in economics. That's what they use to describe the process of supply and demand. It's some invisible hand that's moving products and money around.
Right.
So there's some invisible marketplace out there that's buying and selling you goods, which is cool. And so I've been selling them, and microprocessors, they do well on the global market. Let's just say that. And so I, and since I have a recycling plant to provide me with plastic and alloy, I have to buy some from the global market, but it's not a 1-to-1 ratio where if you do that, it's not as good of a deal, obviously. So I've gotten to this point where I am raking in the dough with my microprocessor plant, but somehow I got my city flipped now, and it's now losing money every single hour.
What?
I know. What? It was weird. So, and I don't know how this happened. To be totally honest, I don't know how it happened. I was in the green. I was doing just fine, right?
Yeah.
Making tons of money. And then when I flipped over to the microprocessing stuff and I did some other stuff to support it, I dipped into the red. So now I have this weird situation where my cash flow is actually really, really well, but it's all from the sales to the marketplace. None of it is from taxes, or, you know, I lose money with the taxes, but it's enough where it's like, I've got tons of cash, you know, sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars, but I'm losing money.
you're like an Arabian prince, dude. A Saudi Arabian prince.
Yeah,
like,
it's so weird.
Tons of oil money, but everything else costs money. If it weren't for oil, you'd just
Which is funny. My advisor, because you know how it's, you know, it's got your advisors. When I pull up the budget stuff, he goes, hey, just so you know, you're in the red, but it's okay because we're getting it from these other businesses. And then he gives you the warning. He's like, so you better make sure they're successful. Otherwise, we could be in a lot of trouble. Ooh. All right, I'll support it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, you know, which is kind of cool. She's like, oh, all right, how do I do this? So here's my issue is that the microprocessors and the plastic and the alloy are what you use to build the solar thing. Exactly. So my problem is, if I switch to building the solar thing, I'm no longer going to be selling them on the marketplace. See, and now I'm like, oh, great, my city's losing money. And so what do I do? Like, so I got to figure out how to get back to that equilibrium again. And it's so hard. Well, and I know what happened is, and this is, the game is designed perfectly for this, and you can tell that they went through and did all the math, where it's like the services, how do I want to say this? It's like an exact equilibrium where for the number of people you have and for the buildings you have and the revenue that you bring in from those exactly equals the costs that that are required to perfectly, service the city. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Not really.
So if you have, if you got like 100 residents and they got their 100 jobs, and in order to support them, you need to have like a fire station and a police station and garbage and water and power and stuff like that.
Right.
To effectively service all of those 100 residents, it costs about the exact same amount as to service them as you'll receive in taxes.
Mm.
So the trick is to figure out how to prioritize which services can you kind of slack on and which ones can you overdo it on. And if you get that right, then you know, that difference there is what you're going to earn each hour. And there's ways that you can mess with it. Like you can get very granular on your taxes that you collect, and you could charge a higher percentage for certain classes, you know, the high, medium, and low. And that'll tip the balance for some stuff. And I think where I got into trouble actually was I developed a university so I could then do research projects to then buy some of the stuff that I needed. And that was where I think the university is the one that put me over the top. And I'm struggling to – the university is too big for the size city that I have right now, I think, or something like that, right? And so I'm like, okay, I want to try to build out the city a little bit more. But then all of a sudden I need to add more services because I was right on the line.
Right.
And, I mean, it's such an interesting balancing game. You're like, okay, all right. You know, and so
see, I think you know, one of the things that you don't do, obviously, is you don't buy a lot of services from other cities, and that's where I get into this idea that I think it's actually a smart idea that, you know, they justified the online portion of it with DRM, but I don't think that it was. I think a lot of people's problem is like they haven't played it long enough to sit there and go, you know, there actually is a strong advantage to having somebody else supply the coal for have one city supply the coal, have one city supply the supply the, you know, the water once
to specialize,
and to really specialize so that, you know, and then you would do the lion's share of the work to build a solar plant. And now we all have a solar plant. We're all doing great, you know, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, people, you know, I think one of the big reasons why people are complaining about the game is because they haven't actually given enough time to realize that there is an advantage to playing with your friends.
Well, it's hard when not all your friends can get online.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But it'll work. So, okay. So here's my other issue that I'm working through, and I just, it kills me. I don't know what to do. Okay. Yeah. And this is a legitimate quandary. All right. You don't necessarily have to have an answer.
Good, because I probably won't.
But the way that the game is designed is that there are two different types of streets.
Right. Okay?
There's like a street, and then there's an avenue, and then for each of those, they have different density levels. Okay.
Right.
The big difference between a street and an avenue is a street takes up what I would call one square.
Right.
And an avenue takes up two squares. Okay?
Okay.
And avenues are inherently, like, they can handle more cars than streets because they're like twice as many lanes or whatever it is.
Right.
And so I've reached this point in my city where traffic is a problem. and it's so frustrating because, city. And I didn't realize that this was happening until it was too late. but it was like, once it happened, I went, oh yeah, of course. So I started to have traffic issues. So I just have streets everywhere. That's it. Except for like the main avenue going down the middle of my city. Okay. Which was already there. I didn't have a choice on where to put that.
You know what this city reminds me of, James?
What?
Silicon Valley.
Yeah, no, it's bad. So, but here's what happened, is I had these streets and traffic would start to build up. And so I would upgrade the streets
right.
to a higher and higher density. Well, the game goes, oh, cool, higher density, let's build bigger buildings.
Right.
Do you know what comes with bigger buildings?
More population.
People. And so I've gotten to this point where I'm like, well, this is bad. And I'm like, I'm afraid to expand because of the way it's going to work. It's just, it totally impacts my city, which affects your fire department and your garbage collection and your police, because they literally cannot get to where they need to get to fast enough. And I'm just like, and I know what I need to do. I need to build avenues, but in order to build avenues, I'm going to have to destroy some buildings. And right. I'm just like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this without throwing my entire city into chaos. And there's a part of me that's just like, do I just shrug my shoulders and go,
yes.
Well, this is this city. If you want to live here, that's what it's like. Or the other one I thought of was, I could raise my taxes because obviously I've got the demand.
Right, yeah.
and that way I can, you know.
Lower your population.
until people start leaving, because I'll be like, all right, perfect. And I just got to decide, like, which,
dude,
you know.
This is sounding more and more like Silicon Valley every passing minute. Like, it's awesome. Almost like you grew up here.
Yeah, so I've got this weird, like, yeah, I've got a chip manufacturer, uncontrolled, unbelievably bad traffic. Yeah, but it's fun to, like, to deal with these issues. And the other one, which I didn't know, was, like, and now I do, which is, okay, when you build a road, so all buildings have to be connected to a road. Even when you zone right. something, it's got to be zoned up against the road. But the question is, how far apart do you spread the roads? And I didn't know that answer. And now that I've played the game, I've actually been adding, this is going to sound really weird given what I just said, I've been adding twice as many roads as I need to.
Mm.
I think, because I've been doing it, so like if you have a big building, there's a road on both sides of it.
Right.
And I think if I got rid of the road, then I can, you know, then there'll be just two big buildings butt up against each other with an avenue going down the middle of them. I think that's the way to do it. But I don't know. I wanted to build another city and find out. Because this one's done. from a traffic standpoint, I think I'm just hosed.
Right. That's funny. Well, I look forward to playing it. I mean.
Yeah, the other one I did too, which could have been my issue, was I have like long blocks.
Right.
Like they're 4 and 5 regular blocks long.
Mm.
And so there's just these, and which the cars just pile up and they have nowhere to go, right? I mean, which I think could be part of my other issue is like, okay, maybe less long give more escape routes for people. I don't know. I got some ideas. What I could pose, I could wrap the city in an avenue, perhaps. You know, do it like Paris style, where so in Paris, like the real city, not the simulation one that you buy in DLC, is it's got the downtown avenue, and then there's actually like a freeway that wraps around the city. And
right.
So essentially with Paris, what you do is you get yourself out to the edge, drive around in a big circle to where you want, and then you jump back in. It's kind of how that works. I wonder if I could do something similar to that, where I could just I could wrap it, and yeah.
You know what I think you should do, James? I think we should play the game. Oh.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so that was like a ton on SimCity, but I've been saving up for this game and anxiously anticipating it.
What do we say? We've talked
where
every update every time they've had an update, we've talked about it on the show.
Hey, you know, I'll admit it. I'm okay with it. So, which by the second we get done, that's what I'm going to go do. And it's going to be fun. So I'm loving it. But there actually was other stuff that happened.
Yeah, seriously. Let's get back.
All right. Let's get back to it. So another piece of fun little news, which I don't know if you caught this, but Facebook is redesigning their news feed.
Yeah. Tell
did you hear about
it.
That?
Yeah. I did, actually, but...
Okay. All right. So basically, Facebook made an announcement, and it will be rolling out whenever it rolls out.
Yeah.
Because they take their time on this stuff, which I think is smart, so they don't run into issues like EA did. I'm not going to stop. And they're basically what they're attempting to do is create a feed that is mobile inspired. So it feels like their mobile feed for their web. Feed, I guess. And so the news feed, right, is when, like, when you first log in, it's all the stories that you scroll through and you like and you comment on and stuff like that.
Right.
And so a couple of the features about it that they have added is, number one, it's wider than it used to be. So, you know, it's a little bit more prominent, which means the photos and videos are all going to be bigger, which they have decided that those are actually an important part of their service.
Yes.
Just like on the iOS apps, how it has kind of it's not a control panel, a menu system is off right. On the side. They have now moved that off to the side, and it will expand when you hover over it. They have also added different, what would you call it, filters on the feed or something like that. So it's easier to say, like, oh, just show me the photos, or just show me the games, or just show me the
interesting.
News, or
that's
just show
cool.
me my friends. Or that's, give me the whole deal.
I like that. I actually like that. That's cool. Because, I mean, I you know, honestly, like, I don't spend enough time on Facebook to get that. The one thing that I wish they would loosen up on is, like, there's such a clear correlation between, like, the friends that you click on versus the information that they give you. And, like, I've got a few friends on Facebook, and, like, there are literally, like, 500 friends that I never get any stories from.
Mm.
And because I just never clicked on their webpage after we became friends. But this doesn't mean that I wouldn't if I didn't get interesting news stories from them. I actually don't like how they give you stories. You know what it is? I actually know what it is. It's the fact that it's actually designed to be a learning system where it will prioritize things that you like versus things that you hide. And you're actually supposed to curate it like you would curate a Pandora station or a Netflix. You're actually supposed to rate things. It's not just for the sake of making people feel good because you like them. It actually, it tunes your news feed. So you get more stories and it diversifies and they learn with you. And I don't, and I really need to start because it drives me crazy. But I like that idea because I definitely prefer to check out Facebook on my iPad. I think that's I personally think that's the best venue for Facebooking. The one on the iPhone's a little small. The main one is cool, but it's just so there's so much content. It's just kind of like I feel like I'm overloaded whenever I look at the webpage. Whereas like you kind of get your like main news feed, you get your friends' stories. You can very easily navigate it, but it hides other stuff. So that's cool. I like that a lot. I'm glad to hear that.
So yeah, so the PC version is going to probably look more iPad-ish. And you'll see some of the iPad stuff changing too. That's interesting. I actually this will be weird to say, I think, but there are times when someone will ask me, oh, how's that person doing? And I'll be like, oh, I don't want to visit their page because I don't want to get their updates. But if I visit their page, I can get the answer for you.
Yep.
Because I know that that's, you know, they're watching that algorithm stuff. Because I've seen that multiple times where you wish a person a happy birthday or you visit the page. Oh, all of a sudden you're getting all their updates.
You visit it once and you get everything. It's so lopsided. It's not even, they don't like slowly, like, in, they don't slowly bring you into like, oh, I clicked on it once. Now I get your update. No, it's just like, oh, you clicked on their profile once. It just is in this story.
But then you'll notice it does, like, it will drop off as, again. Which I'm like, Facebook, you got to figure out how to get it so that I don't have to visit their page. You know, give me just enough at the right time. You know, they should be smart enough to notice, man, you know what? It's like every 6 months he visits their page. Let's throw him an update every 4 months.
Yeah.
Well, you know, something
also,
like that.
I also think that – I think – I personally think that – and I, my guess would be that that part of their tuning algorithm, it has a lot to do with what you like and what you hide. And it's – you know, it's – I think I need to start hiding stuff when I don't actually care about, like, okay, I don't care about this type of update. When people post macro or micros, like pictures with text on them and they're stupid – I'm going to start hiding them because, you know, I just like, whatever. Like, if I need that, I go to Reddit. I don't need this on Facebook, let's be honest. And hopefully, you know, it'll start to hide that sort of thing. And
yeah,
I just, it'll
I had
go
a weird
away.
One. What was it? It was like laughing something. It was something that had to do with jokes. And see, and when I visit Facebook using Flipboard, that gives me the raw feed, right? Ooh. There's no filter on top, so I see everything in order. And there happened one time where there was this one, you know, I liked it one time because it, you know, showed a funny picture or something. And it was on my – and it was on Flipboard. And it, I must have just timed it just right because they were like – they threw out like – it was like 7 or 8 posts in a row. And they were all actually legitimately funny. So I was flipping and liking all of them.
Ooh.
Oh, it was such a big mistake. Because then – well, then what I learned, you know, is they started showing up in my feed all the time. Which at first I was okay, but then somewhere in there, I can't tell if someone else got in charge or they changed it, but it suddenly went from, not suddenly, but it went from like harmless fun, okay, I'll say like PG funny,
yeah,
to more of like PG-13, now we're starting to borderline on R and maybe even like, you know, that kind of thing. You know, mainly, and I was just like, I'm not even remotely interested in this. And so I finally had to like, I tried hiding a couple and that didn't work. And then I finally went, you know what? This isn't working. They're still showing them to me. Unlike done. And, you know, which is like the exact opposite of what Facebook wants. So of course, maybe they're like, well, you know, it was no longer something you liked. So it worked, which I'm like, okay.
I don't know.
But yeah, it's weird. So I think they realize that, they, you know, this is a major part of Facebook, and they're trying to get it to be consistent.
Right, and I would say one of the things that is frustrating to me is it's like, and I understand with like Pandora, part of the reason like they're not, you know, part of the key of your it's okay. Reddit is a great example of the fact that they do a lot of things to mess with. How to obscure how their ranking system works, because that is their that's what makes it valuable. What makes the site valuable? Or there's two things that make the site valuable: the user base and content they're submitting, but from a technological perspective, they're. Value added proposition is the algorithm that ranks things. And they have tuned that over time and it works very well and people really like the results that it ends up with, but they've obscured it because they don't want somebody copying it. And Facebook has to do the same thing. But at the same time, like there's a certain amount of transparency that I think you have to give or recommendations on. This is how you use it so that we can tune it to like what you want. Mm-hmm. Everybody does this and I don't understand why. It's like Google won't tell you, this is how you kind of tune your filter. These are the kind of questions you need to ask. This is the basic idea of how we tune the results you get. Because I get people all the time that will like, they'll go into YouTube and they'll click on something and all the related videos will be all these other completely unrelated videos. And And they'll make a comment about, this is so funny, I can't believe, like, this is so random, who would want to watch something like this? And I'm like, you. Google thinks you would want to watch something like that. That's the point. And obviously, and sometimes it's so transparent, like, wow, now I know what kind of videos you're into, because that's what they're showing you. And, you know, and you just have to go, like, that makes me so nervous if anybody were to, like, YouTube and, like, go onto my account, use YouTube and see, like, the related videos. I'm like, wow, what do you watch? Like, you know what?
I've thought about that.
Don't even worry about it. It's, like, worse than somebody seeing your, like, your history. Because at least my history, like, it's explicit. This is what I watch. This is just suggestive of the sort of thing I watch. And it's, like, I want to be able to have some level of control. Because you know what, Google? Sometimes you're wrong about what you think I like. And Facebook is so – they do the same thing. Like, they're so protective of, like – what factors, you know, are how they're weighted and what they're valued. But it's like, you know, honestly, if you would give me just a few, like, if you had like a 30-second tutorial on, if you don't like this person, this is what you do. If you don't like the content,
interesting,
this is what you do. And if you had a couple of filters that I could kind of play with and adjust to really kind of like, we can work together where I tell you what I think I want to see, and then you watch what I actually look at, and you base it off of that, and we work together, I feel like you could really build a satisfying algorithm to give me the information that I want when I want. And I give the example of, you know, I've been working on the same Pandora station for, I think it's 7 years now. It's only been 5 years. Yeah. So I've been working on one Pandora station for 5 years. I have like 20, but
okay.
The only one I really listen to is this one. And it's...
See, I shuffle, like, 7 different stations.
Right, and which most...
I'm a man of many tastes.
Well, the thing is that mine, it's super diverse. I mean, it plays everything.
So
but it's
mine.
Well, because you have 7 different ones. But my point is, my point in this is that over time, it has become really a very good... content discovery engine. Tell you how often, like, I've gone to concerts and, like, the headliner that you don't even recognize, like, you have no idea who this, you're like, you show up and you're like, I know this song. And you go back and you realize I thumbed up like 4 of their songs and just never realized that was the band I was into. And I find that there are like, when you actually like invest time, work with the algorithm, and actually, one of my big things is that if I kind of like a song, I thumbs up it. If I don't like, if I kind of don't like a song, I thumbs down it. And like, I really
wish
virtually everything, because that's what Pandora is designed to deal with. It doesn't do very well with the quote music discovery when you don't rate very much.
Oops.
I
like my stations the way they are, and so I'm afraid to rate them for fear that I'll tweak them.
And I have had to delete artists once or twice where I added somebody and it just added a flood of, that's not the direction I wanted this station to go. Mm-hmm. But I have no problem, like, I'm more nervous about seeding stuff than thumbs up and thumbs downing things.
Oh, okay.
Like, and because the thumbs up and, you know, when you seed, that's a hard push.
Oh,
when
yeah.
you thumbs up and thumbs down, that's a soft push.
Well, which is what, I mean, in some ways, the Facebook feed, when they have your close friends, that's a seed, in my opinion.
Right.
You're going, hey, these are people who are important to me, and show me updates who, you know who's tied in with them, and, you know, and if all of us are connected, I want to see their update, and you know it.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm going to bring it back a little more to the feed, because I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, they got to get the algorithm right, and it still has a ways to go. The other one, O'Malik did a cool little review of it, because he was funny. He's like, so I don't like Facebook, but I'm a tech guy. And everyone always rags on me because anytime Facebook messes with something, all I do is rag on them. He goes, so here's my legitimate, like, you know, feedback on it. He goes, I actually took the time to play around with it and figure it out. And so he ended up, he did talk about good things, but I'll ignore that because I know he wouldn't want me to read it anyways. And talk about the, he had four burning questions and then what it means from a business money perspective. And so I don't know if we'll get to all of them, but one of the things he says is it goes, okay, redesign, awesome. But how does it solve Facebook's two major challenges, retention and engagement? It's like, if anything, now I'm going to spend less time on it because you made it easier to skim photos and get out a lot faster. And he's like, and how does this help you out with the younger demographic who is actually leaving the service or at least not using it as much? Because that has, how does your redesign address that? He also, he talks about how the actual news feed, he goes, even though you got bigger photos and videos, he goes, it's still messy and a lot, and it's actually less useful than it used to be. It's like, so how about that, Facebook? And then he brings up the question about the algorithm. He's like, is that going to be any better, guys? Or is he, but it's like, did you hit some sort of ceiling on how good it can be? And our expectations are just too high for you, which is interesting. And then he makes some thoughts on the business and the money perspective of things on why they would do it. And he's like, if anything, is Facebook is recognizing that they are more news feed centric than anything else, which is why things like search and other things have not really succeeded very well. Right. But the news feed is where it's at. And so he's like, so it needs to stay up to date and look current. And so he talks about that. And then he goes, bigger photos will actually condition people to bigger ads over time.
Yeah, you know, I will be honest. I find that the, you know,
And so he's like, you could see Facebook turning to a lot more of just the traditional advertising on the, whether it's on the mobile or on the web. And he's like, and this is just their first step to do that. Of course, someone like me with ad blocker, I don't care.
Yeah, do whatever you want.
have fun with that one. Yeah. And then he says, what is this last one? Because despite all their posturing, Facebook is terrible at providing context and surfacing ads that make sense. But if they start surfacing similar pointless and terrible ads in the main feed, with all those stupid paid shares by my friends, then this grand experiment to make more money is going to backfire. So he's like, so basically, if they're going to rely on ads, they need to make them more relevant, which we've already talked about how that could be a semi-issue since they can't even seem to get our friends' updates relevant just right.
Yeah, see, that's the real trick, right? I mean, that's the problem, is that the ads are supposed to be relevant, and they're not because you can't get the right friend. Because I want this friend to have, you know, to, you know, well, I'm, you know what, I thought about saying something funny, but decided that it...
Okay, so it's so cool, Facebook, they're doing a news feed update. It seems to be very much cosmetic in nature, which you've got to keep doing. You don't have a choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's better. Why wouldn't you make that update? You know, and it's funny, every time people complain about, oh my gosh, I hate timeline, everybody's got a timeline now, and it looks better. Like, what the heck, guys? Like, chill out.
Yeah, so I think, I think it's cool, and they're actually going to have to probably slowly update all of that other stuff, because that will look different and weird and old, because that's how that works. But there's still some bigger issues that they need to be solving, which... they are probably working on it not as we speak, but some of them might be. You never know. Those guys, you know, they don't sleep. They just
I'll bet they work on the weekends. Yeah.
They're like EA, 24/7. We're solving the problem. Oh, just relax.
Yeah, just relax. Keep going, carry on. Yeah.
So there you go.
Interesting. So I want to talk about two things. So I kind of want to bring this up as a bigger story. Things are not going well for Windows 8.
Oh, interesting. You skipped the one I thought you were going to do, but okay.
You want me? Well, okay. You know what?
No, do it.
Okay. I'm going to do this one relatively quickly. So basically, this is what's going on, and Wait, I know. This is what happened. Samsung execs came out. I'm just going to move on and pretend like it's not true. Samsung exists. So over the weekend, Samsung has been being rough to Microsoft lately. They build tablets. They're building tablets, RT tablets.
Did Samsung ever actually make a Windows-based PC?
Yeah.
That's not stupid. Okay, well, I just know, like, the Samsung Chromebooks, and I know they're doing, like, they're best friends with Google.
Right. They make tons of laptops.
Obviously, that's not the best, and so why would I care about them? But
exactly. they're not Apple.
pretend I didn't hear that.
Hear what? what was I going to say? So basically, there two things happened this week. Number one, Samsung is they're thinking about pulling their line of RT tablets out of
Germany, right?
Out of Germany and Europe at large, which is a big problem for. Sales. Microsoft. Yeah, it really does hurt sales. I know.
It's a big one. General rule, if you're not selling, not going to make a lot of money.
Bottom line is affected. So Germany is, that was one big piece of news that was coming out. But there was a dude, his name is Jundong Su, and he is an exec for Samsung Electronics. Basically, he came out and said that Windows 8 is the reason why that computers are on the decline.
Love it.
he did not even try to pretend it. He's like, dude, it's awful. It's nobody wants it, and it's the reason why PC sales are so depressed.
Wow.
Which I really want to point out the fact that guess what? When Windows 8 came out and everybody was talking about it, you heard it here first, Furlough Bros. We basically, all I was saying all along was, it's not going to be that bad. It's actually going to be pretty good in some ways. The problem is, it's not familiar, so people aren't going to buy it, and it's going to hurt PC sales. And what you're going to see is you're going to see this PC thing shrinking even more, and people are going to freak out about it, which they are. Guess what? It's all coming true. This is why you listen to the show. We're brilliant.
Center of the world. Bless your Apple or Google.
Yeah, really.
Things are fine.
Exactly.
Or Samsung, really. I mean, you know, or I should say the handset division of Samsung.
Right. The chip division's not doing too bad either.
Don't they sell all their chips to Apple, I think? Or
yeah, they build all the ASICs and
their processors. Which is probably why they are comfortable, getting, what was the word that you used? A vocal about Microsoft and some of their issues. Because there's like, we're not as dependent on you as we used to be, so we're gonna call like we see it.
Right. Yeah. They don't need to be friends with them. They're one of the biggest manufacturers in the world.
We don't need to be friends with you. Yeah. Just saying.
Yeah. And
we can do that.
But there were a couple articles out this week that were just like, man, they were bashing on Windows. Another big news story is Microsoft has significantly. They have a huge price discount on Windows 8 for OEMs, like to the tune of it went from $120 down to $30 in some cases. I mean, they are doing whatever they can to get people to buy Windows 8 because people aren't buying new computers.
So their hope is that the manufacturers will pass it along to consumers. Is that their
and give them $100 discount on the
Microsoft's taking the brunt of it instead of the OEMs. All right,
exactly. So which you know is
how's
good
that working for you?
Not well. The other article that I read, man, this is
I was
crazy.
Under the impression that price was never really the issue to begin with.
Well, you'd think. It's the only thing Microsoft can do. It's the only variable they have left to play with. So now
you got Windows Blue coming down the pipe.
Yeah, well,
you just gotta work on that faster.
I can say it's not here yet. It's the only thing that they can do is to try to put them on discount.
Today, yeah.
And basically, I read this really good article.
Apple put their iPhone on discount shortly after they released it, and it seemed to be doing just fine. So,
it's true.
I could see it.
I don't think it's the end of Microsoft or Windows 8, and I think it will help Windows 8, because I really do, I still believe it's not a bad operating system, it's just a...
Yeah, what are you running right now?
I'm running Windows 7, but that's because I don't have any touch capabilities. If I bought a new laptop with a touch screen, I would happily buy a Windows 8 computer.
I would agree with that. Okay, and, fair enough.
You know,
continue out of.
Right. So basically, this TechPinions did an article where they basically were talking about, like, this post PC era, and kind of how it's and what's going on here, and they're talking about like the reality of sales and stuff, and just how Windows 8 is not selling, and it's like a huge problem. People are like pulling out of the market, or either they're not building tablets or they're pulling out of the market, and on top of this, it's like Windows Phone 8 lost market share during the Christmas season. I don't know how I missed that one, but it's just like I realize they're not growing like everybody else is growing, technically their number of phones increased, but overall in the market, they're doing worse than everybody else. And, you know, this is the phone that I kept saying, it's not bad, it's good, go and get it. Nobody's going and getting it, doesn't matter. I'm like, I'm trying really, really hard, Microsoft, to, like, be on your guys' side, and you're not doing anything to help it. You know, it's just, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And it's like, you know, there's a part of me that was like, I realize that what I've done here is I've taken the opinion position that allows me to be right no matter what happens. Because basically what I've said is it's a very good system, especially from an underlying perspective. It's very robust. It's got a bunch of new features. People just have to get used to it and they'll like it. So if it does really well, guess what I get to say? I told you it was a good operating system. And at the same time, I've also said, you know, but people aren't familiar with it, which is going to put a bad taste in their mouth, and I think it's going to hurt the market overall.
Right.
So that when the market goes down, guess what? I get to say I was right. Now this is behind the scenes, everybody. But it's crazy to me because I actually thought my gut instinct was it was going to be bad for a little bit in the beginning for the first like month, maybe two, but after 6 months, things would be turning around by I don't know. March 2013,
now
it wouldn't be that bad of it. It would be like, no, we're doing all right. We're moving systems. We're selling stuff. We are working the plan. It's not moving as fast as we want it to, but that's okay. We just need to keep working the plan. And the plan's not working. It's terrible. And I don't know. I think they're going to stay the course. And I think
them and Nintendo both.
I know.
It's all good. We got a strategy. We're at right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I like our
plan. I like it a lot. I don't know. It's not going to spell the end of the company. They're still going to make a ton of money, but it's definitely like one more. Jeez, guys, come on! You actually had something here, and that's what's so frustrating about it. Is it's not like Vista, which is just such a fumbling for so many different reasons. And it really, they got what they deserved on Vista. They thought they were better than that. And Apple was ready to compete at the time. And people were still relatively happy with XP. And, you know, it's what happened. Like, there's no way around it. And it happened. I feel like it's not as much of an unmitigated disaster from a actual product perspective, but evidently from a sales perspective, it is as big, if not bigger, of an unmitigated disaster. And a lot of that is still the bad taste from Vista. I don't know. It's crazy though. The whole thing is crazy. You just wouldn't. I don't know. And I guess at this point, I'm just like reading these articles this week. I was just kind of in shock. I'm like, wow. I mean, like I know I wasn't like I'm not super nice to Microsoft, but this is worse than I thought it was going to be.
You have noticed, though, or at least I have, because I'm totally biased and aware of this, that in all of these talks about Windows 8 struggles, there are a couple companies that just really have kind of been tight-lipped about it. I'm thinking of Dell and HP in particular. I mean, even like Lenovo. It'd be nice to hear what some of their opinions are. To me, it's some of these smaller players are the ones who are just like whining and complaining about it. But the bigger ones are kind of like, you know what I mean? They're just doing their thing.
Well, that's why I say it's not, you know, I have a feeling, you know, I keep coming back you know, every time when I exaggerate how, or I feel like it, I sometimes when I talk about Windows 8 and its lack of success, it comes off as an exaggeration, because the reality of it is, and I've always said this, they're going to sell a ton, they're going to make billions, but it's a trend that continues to put this, like, every year it gets worse. And now if you look at all operating, you know, I was reading some article and they're talking about the fact that, you know, 10 years ago, 97% of all, or it was like, yeah, it was something ridiculous. Like 97% of all computers were running Windows, a Microsoft operating system. And today only 30% of computers, when you include smartphones and tablets into the, what is a computer. And it's one of those things where, like Samsung, you know, Samsung is a quote a minor player, and they're having success elsewhere, so they can turn to Microsoft and say, you guys are terrible, we don't like you, and they're allowed to just walk away from it. They can make those comments, and and what is HP doing right now? They're trying to figure out a different strategy. How do we survive without Microsoft? Which is the same thing that's Dell behind, you know, and Mike Dell is able to do that now because he's back in control, and they can do it behind the scenes. But, and I guarantee the only reason why there was any cash put on for that sale through Microsoft was exclusively because they know what Michael Dell wants to do is move away from Windows, and they want to give him a real serious reason to not do that.
And well, actually, I was reading that, and they were saying, I thought this was interesting, like, the amount of money that they gave him was only, like, for, like, 6% of the company. It wasn't much.
Right.
And what they said, though, is that Microsoft is actually in a position where they have a significant amount of cash, and they were like, so they could loan him the money, and they said that they're not making a bad interest rate on this loan.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, it was literally just, it was a good investment decision from their standpoint of relatively low risk. And they were like, yeah, we'll make a better return for our investors.
I don't know.
Well, I realize
that that's a very good way to look at it.
It's such a small number.
Yeah, but at the same time,
it's insulting if that's.
They did the same thing to Facebook, though. I mean, Google invested in MySpace. They invested in Facebook, and guess who did the search algorithm for the longest time for Facebook? Microsoft. You know, they do that sort of thing. They you know.
But even with Facebook, it was a bigger percent, and
it was only like 10%. It wasn't that big.
Okay, it's still bigger.
Okay, fair enough. But I don't know. I think it was just enough.
And with Facebook, they gave them a ridiculous sum of money too, which everyone was like, "What?" And, you know, which I think was the part that was interesting about Facebook, right, is they gave them, it was some ridiculous number, right? It was like $10 million or something like that,
$10 million
for 10%.
On 10%, and it extrapolated to a value of a company that was just enormous.
Yeah, which at the time they were like, that's like so much. No way Facebook's worth that. It turned out it was like, you know, Facebook was worth actually a lot more than that. You know, so another good investment on their part. But Microsoft was making a statement with them, right?
Well, and I think
with Dell, it's a different statement. It's a loan.
I don't know.
I think that's a distinction.
I guess maybe I'm completely wrong on this, but
yes,
it just
are.
Okay. I'm going to stand that. I think they just wanted to.
Engineer, what do you know about all this business stuff?
Oh, fair enough.
Oh, mm-hmm. I did. I just pulled that out.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dude, I don't know either.
I guess what my point in all of this is that, Dell and HP and Lenovo aren't going to talk about the fact that that PC sales aren't good, because PC sales are fine. They're not great. Right. They're not great, but they don't have another option yet. And as other people come up with other options, you're going to have more and more of this drumbeat of, yeah, why would you stick with Windows? They're expensive and it doesn't work as well. And you're going to get the Samsung effect. And I think at that point, you know, at that point, that's when it will become a horrible problem for Microsoft. But it's not that they're not at that point yet. So, you know, whatever. Windows 8, it's an interesting one to follow.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the other one, this one was kind of interesting. I'm saving this one to last because I'm hoping nobody's listening by this point, because I feel like what this is going to become is a, what am I doing with my life? And this is going to be strategizing what comes next.
Okay.
And it has to do with a couple of conversations that we've had this last week. I feel like this is one of those weeks. You and I, like, you know, all human beings go through like biological cycles where like their brains work at different levels over different times, and you're like motivated to do for different things. And I feel like you and I coalesced on the, okay, it's time to go do something, change the world, be entrepreneurs, like at the same moment. Mm-hmm. And this article popped right as it was happening. Basically what this is, there's a, I'll just read the first paragraph or so. All right, class, here's your homework assignment. Devise an app, get people to use it, repeat. That was the task for some Stanford students in fall 2007 in what became known here as the Facebook class. No one expected what happened next. And basically what this article goes into describe is the story of this teacher and these students. And basically what they did was they went through and they built a bunch of apps, and they had to like, and it follows a couple of them and like how they built it and how they would go out and they would build these apps just to have something out there. Then they would build the app and people would start using it. And they found that as people started using it, they'd get users, and then eventually they throw ads onto there. And all of a sudden they're making thousands of dollars a month. And the app starts to explode. VC money comes in, and there's a story. One of the students has this like short story where he's like, "Yeah, there was a day where I was just sitting there, and I was talking to my dad, and he goes, we're working on the app. We're doing this, this, and this. We've got investors coming tomorrow. We've got this going on. And I have a paper for my class that I have to write tonight." I goes, "I don't have time for all of this." And his dad goes, "Why are you still in class?" What? And he goes, "Why don't you just drop out and do this giant, and you can always go back to school. You're making tons of money." And the guy was like, "That's a good idea." And like ended up developing an app that sold for, you know, like seven figures. You know, pretty well. But what they talked about was this idea of, it started this article. Yeah. In one part, it's a biopic talking about people and how they developed this class and how they developed these apps. One of the interesting ones was there's these guys, they had to do they built this app, and it was called Hotness, and it was allowed you to rate the hotness of your friends.
Okay. Hot or
and,
not.
And they were like, they built this great app, and like two or three days before their like big presentation and like they launched the app, they deleted all the code, and so they had to rebuild the app.
What?
Like,
no,
bare bones, just super bare bones.
No.
And in like 3 days, they like present the app to class. It's completely bare bones, and they push it on the app store, and like 3 weeks later had, like, it was something like ridiculous, like tens of thousands of,
oh my
of
gosh,
users. And they were like, and basically what ended up happening is what started as this like complete disaster forced them to focus on only the features that were needed. So I had like four features, and that was it. And that's what people loved. They were like super simple. But they also like, they really pioneered this idea of the lean startup. The idea that you don't
need investors. Oh, I want to buy that book so bad.
I know. And you don't need investors. You don't need a lot to do this. You come up with the idea, and you just start sprinting towards an end product. And it doesn't matter that you don't have all the features. It doesn't matter that it's buggy. Mm. It doesn't matter that it doesn't work. It doesn't matter. You just get your user base, and you fix it as it comes on. And I'm going to give you an example right now of an app that drives me crazy, because this is exactly what they're doing. It's called Phrase Friend Free. I'm Matthew Dean, if you want to play against me. It's pretty fun. It is an atrocious app. It is the most glitchy app I have ever seen. And all it is Wheel of Fortune that you can play with friends. It's so much fun. I can't even stand it. It's like the only social game that I'll like stomach. And I will put up with it, and I do not put up with glitchy apps. And I put up with it because it's actually fun. And it's just crazy to me, because I'm like, this is the perfect example. Somebody said, you know what we should do? We should make a Wheel of Fortune game. We should call it Phrase Friends Free, and like, you know, and add to that suite of like Words with Friends Free or Dice Free. Of like, mm-hmm. And it's this other company, and they came up with the idea, and it's doing fantastic. It's doing great. And it, like, sometimes it will crash so bad that the only way to get it to work is to delete it and to re-download it from the App Store.
What?
And you want to know what? I've re-downloaded it 4 times. That's how much I enjoy this game. And wow. It's actually they've had a couple of updates and it's way more stable now. But
yeah,
my
you're
point
really
was,
selling it.
I can say and my point on all of this was the fact that to my dismay, like that's exactly what this is. Somebody came up with a idea and brought it to market as fast as humanly possible. And it didn't matter that it's terrible. It's not SimCity, or I should say, SimCity is a great example of this. They worked on the core mechanic. They got the core mechanic done. Mm-hmm. And then once they had that like locked on how the actual city balancing works, they sprinted to the launch. They sprinted through the graphics. They sprinted through the servers. They sprinted through the DRM. They sprinted through everything. And nothing works except the core game mechanic, and it's great.
And it's amazing.
Mm. And
okay, all right.
We all went out and bought it, and we're all putting up with it, even though it doesn't work. Yeah, because the core idea is good. So this is where I come into I've got these ideas, and you and I talk about this every once in a while.
Dude, I've even go there, I have thought of and I think this was proposed once, and I just don't know why they do it. But why don't business schools team up with the programming, departments, and you know what I mean, and be like, here's your senior project, and at least for business school, it's like here's an opportunity for you to practice working with, other skilled people, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? I would love to see if my MBA program were like, hey, here's it's an app class, and with the part of the MBA's job is to come up with, do the market research, figure out what's fun, whatever, and collaborate with a set of software engineers who are in an app class in their CS department, and it's one class, and you meet regularly, and you have meetings, and you strategize, and you come up with ideas, and the whole goal at the end of the semester is you launch an app, and your grade is perhaps based on how many users you have, or you pick a metric
right.
that could be interesting. So there's a little bit of pressure. It's got to do good. And if you totally fall flat, you will fail this class. That is a potential here.
Yeah. you sit there and you go,
class.
Yeah, you sit there and go, that's a great idea. I took an app building class last semester, and for a number of reasons, I ended up actually having to take an incomplete on the class. And part of it was my teacher got breast cancer and that sort of threw the whole class for a loop. Yeah. But along with changing work conditions and more responsibility and more time, it just became obvious that it wasn't something I was going to be able to do. But her big thing was she wanted us to build an app. And I was very much taking the class on the premise of, I want to learn how to program apps. Like, I'm not going to build an app in this class. Are you kidding me? And reading this article, I'm like, I am such an idiot. Like, I get it now. I get what she was trying to get us to do. And she just never told us, look, this is what happens. Students get in classes, they take a semester, they build an app, and then they become millionaires. And oftentimes, oftentimes nothing comes of it. Nothing more than a small stream of income. But every once in a while, it becomes huge. If you actually have a good idea, and you can simplify it down to the core mechanic and just get rid of all the other garbage. It's like, I keep asking this question to myself, like, why are there no high-end games for the iPad? Like, why are, like, specifically real-time strategies? I feel like real-time strategy is the perfect game for an iPad, especially a full-sized one, because, you get into all your feature sets, that's how the game is played. I mean, it's a flat screen, and, it doesn't require, a lot of people say it requires a keyboard, but I completely disagree. And I just sit there and I go, like, why not do that? And the reason why is because if you're going to build a decent game with decent graphics, it requires way more capital, and nobody's doing that right now.
Right.
And because that's not how you make money with apps.
Which is why you sit there and it's like with SimCity, they've already invested in the infrastructure to make Glassbox work. And if it's really all on a server, then all they need to do is transfer the graphics over.
Right.
Do it. Similar to that, from what I understand, that's what they're doing with the Mac. And that's why they were like, we spent all this time on Glassbox, we released it for the PC, which is why they were able to do it for the Mac in less than a year. And I would love to see in another year or, less than a year, then they roll it out for the iPhone. And what would be awesome is single origin account. Doesn't matter. You can transfer your city and play on any platform. Right.
You can take your city with you on your iPad and come back home and then play on
it. And that would work because it's all based on the servers, right? They don't have to try to rewrite the code for their for the core feature, the simulation, for Glassbox.
Right.
Now it's really just let's get the Windows right and make sure we get the user interface working properly because there's no typing in SimCity either, so it'd be perfect. But interesting.
This whole thing is really driving me crazy because I'm suddenly realizing that I have good ideas and in some cases I've even put in a tremendous amount of time and effort into building the core idea and just haven't sprinted to the finish line on the premise of I'll fix it when I get there. And I finish one, so the race is over because you just got to get there as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm sitting here and it's like, I talk about this this week, this is where I hope people aren't listening. This week we talked about the idea of, we should have a phone number name server instead of your domain name servers where we get rid of phone numbers. Why do we have phone numbers anymore? It drives me crazy. Come out with a server and an app and just sprint to the finish line on this and say, this is what we're doing. And honestly, I come back to the idea of I still think you do a Kickstarter project, but the only reason why you do a Kickstarter project is because as good as they are for raising money, they're way better for raising your Q factor. They're way better for getting people to notice you and to pay attention and to get invested literally more than just financially, but emotionally in your project. Well, I paid money, so of course I'm going to use it and download the app. Why wouldn't I? I invested in it. And I think that I really believe that at this point, man, I got to get my, and we talk about doing something more with this show, taking another step. And we ask the question, well, how do you get developers? What do we need to do? And we try to get all of our ducks in a row before we just start sprinting we try to figure out where the end zone is and what course we're going to take to get there. When the reality of it is that the people who are succeeding because they just start running. I think that's where the end zone is. So I'm just going to go as fast as I can. And I don't know. It's the game has changed in a large, capacity. And I want to acknowledge that with how I act. I don't know. Got to be, we talked about.
Well, I know what to get you now for your next birthday.
Okay. That is 6 months from now, so.
I know. I should get it to you earlier.
Well, or you could just tell me what it is and I can.
Well, there's two books that I would get you for your birthday.
Yeah.
The first one is actually probably called The Lean Startup.
Yeah.
How today's entrepreneurs use continuous innovation to create radically successful businesses by Eric Ries. And then the other one is The $100 Startup. Reinvent the way you make a living, do what you love, and create a new future by Chris Gullabaloo. That can't be right. I probably said that wrong.
Probably.
That's what it looks like. But those are two books that are currently sitting on my wish list that I would not mind buying that are obviously focused on that concept and, this idea that, no, you don't have to get crazy and have everything figured out. There's a lot of value, which I agree. I fall into that same trap. I like to have everything perfect before I share it. And it's hard. It's hard to let that go.
Yeah.
But there you go, man. Interessante. Oh, I got sucked into my wish list. I shouldn't do that.
I would say you are zoned out, man. I know we're close to the end of the show, but
I got a good wish list. Let me just say, you talk about how you got a good curated Pandora station. Yeah. I got a good curated wish list. oh, this is a great book. Oh, I want to read that one too. Oh yeah, this one. I read the reviews on this and this was fantastic.
That's awesome.
I've got all these books. Yeah. that I made it a goal to actually read more books, like not just audiobooks, but actually read physical, like written text, and not just articles either. Because I do have a burgeoning wish list that I would love to get through, and someday I would like to get an iPad, and that would I would love for that to be a great excuse. Oh, it's because I read books, and now I can use it to read.
You know, it's funny. I actually read more after I got my Kindle Fire, my Kindle Paperwhite, because, you know, I mean, like, and I've always been kind of a big reader, like an actual reader, but I read more now because I have this device that I feel like I have to justify the cost of. But they're nice, man. They're super nice. I actually really, I was a naysayer on the ebook reader for a while, for a long while. I think the Paperwhite is uniquely different in that it actually works in all light, which is makes it awesome. But
I understand. I actually have a friend who he did a lot of reading on the iPad and ended up buying a Paperwhite because he was doing too much reading for the iPad and was having to stop because of the eye strain. And he's like, now he can go much longer on the Paperwhite.
Oh, yeah. I've sat and read for 4 or 5 hours. And the best part is I only charge it once every 2 books.
Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, books are awesome. I agree. So before we wrap it up, I wanted to cover one last one. Okay.
Tell me about it.
Since I have nowhere to go, I'm cool with going over. In Palo Alto, there is Friend Trend. Let me just read this article. It's a new social media startup that branded itself as a fun, intuitive way to connect and share with friends online. It celebrated its long-awaited launch at 9 a.m. this morning, shuttering its doors later this morning at 9:45 a.m.
Wait, say that one more time?
Sure. Friend Trend, it is a new social media startup that is a fun and intuitive way to connect and share with friends online. Yeah. Okay. It launched at 9 a.m. in the morning and shuttered its doors later that morning at 9:45 a.m.
Okay. 45 minutes later.
It's the brainchild of tech developer Greg Nisham, who is 36. Friend Trend was designed to be a virtual community for friends and acquaintances to interact using live chat and photo sharing features, a service the site provided for exactly 45 minutes before the company liquidated all of its assets. And then he goes on to say, the site just didn't catch on. What can I say?
What?
He launched excitedly with the tagline, get ready for the next wave in social media. He goes, I posted some videos and messages on my little Friend Trend pod, as we call them, but there were only like 5 or 6 other users, and they all worked for the company. So I was like, this is lame. So this article might have been on The Onion.
I was going to say, this is an Onion article, right?
Yeah, and then I love how during a candid Porsche modem 10 minutes after the site had been removed and an hour after it had been launched, he cited myriad difficulties with the site's first 15 to 20 minutes, including logistical hurdles, a stubborn market share, and administrative hassles. Yeah, I love this quote. Within 52 seconds of the site's launch, you could tell things weren't looking good. And after 30 minutes, I figured, all right, let's just give it 15 more minutes. And if it hasn't taken off by then, forget it.
That's hilarious.
You attempted to sell the company with outside investors, and it just didn't work. But, dude, The Onion, so awesome. Friend Trend. And it's spelled – Friend is spelled without an I, by the way.
Of course.
But yeah, I just The Onion. Love it.
That's so funny, man.
It just feels that way sometimes, doesn't it? Man, these things pop up like little fruit flies, and then they're done.
Well, yeah. Well, it's funny. Do you still use Path?
No, not really.
Yeah. See, I have a friend who works for Path, and that was like the first time I had thought about it.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. And I had to I realized I was about to go on like, this is why I don't use it, like tirade. I'm like, I don't need to do that right now. Not when you work there. I'm a nicer person than that. this is why your career is stupid and you're going to be out of a job soon. And actually, the biggest problem with Path is that nobody uses it, ironically. but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
But that's what that is all about, right? I mean, it's just these like that's the joke of it is it's all about the speed at which you can do it. And if it's not fast enough, it's not even worth it. You know, and they do pop so quick. Oh man.
I think part of it there is so for some of the startups where like we'll launch something, it will be amazing, and then we'll get bought out, you know, a couple months later, and it'll all be good.
Right.
We'll retire millionaires and then make the startup we really wanted.
Right, which, you know, is true if you have a great product.
Yeah.
Anyways,
that's my note that we'll leave it on. With that, I really do have a city that needs its mayor.
Yeah.
To figure out the budgetary problems and fix some of the transportation woes that are going on or something.
Fair enough.
I'll figure it out. But hey, man, it has been awesome. Everyone else, thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my fellow mayor is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.